Chippendales, it is the final Saturday of December. And you know what that means. And by that, no, you don't, because we've never done this before. Welcome to the very first Daily Tips That May or May Not Help You guest tip interview. Every Wednesday this month, you heard from Edward Miskey, and now we are inviting him to your ears and to your screens if you are watching us on the YouTube to hear a little bit more about Edward, who he is, what brought him to the podcast, and tips and tricks he learned along the way of all the things that make him him. Please follow us at Daily Tips Pod everywhere. Please follow Edward Miskey everywhere at the links in our show notes. And without further ado, Edward Miskey, thank you for joining us for the month of December. How are you?
Oh my God, hi. I'm so great. Let's get some noise for the dress. I'm wearing my little beach shirt because I just got back from Puerto Rico. Hey.
Yeah, you did.
Hey.
First PTO vacation I've ever had in my whole life. I've never taken a vacation in my whole life ever because theater is miserable and you're not allowed to take vacation ever. And when you do, it's coming straight out of your pocket.
Well, so Edward, are you telling me therefore that you got a theater job with PTO?
No, ma'am. I left theater entirely.
Oh!
I mean, you knew this. The audience didn't. So you can, yeah. I love your surprise face. But yes, I did because I wanted to make adult money. And PTO was a part of that. And it has changed my life. And Puerto Rico was my entry into using my PTO because my VP of finance yelled at me for not using it yet.
Well, Edward, we're going to back up a little bit and say, like, who are you? Where are you from? What's your deal? That's a big question. Who are you? Where are you from is where we're going to start.
Okay, great. What's my deal? I don't know. I can answer that. I don't know what my deal is. I am from the central Pennsylvania area. I have been in New York for almost 20 years. This upcoming June will be 20 years, which is crazy
wow,
to me.
Congrats.
Oh, how am I still alive? I don't know. Somehow. I made it. This is what making it looks like, kids.
And based on our previous conversation, you moved to New York for theater?
I did, yeah. Well, at kind of both. I wanted to be, I guess, what later became Lady Gaga, but she was not on the scene when I got here. I'm that old. And I did the whole downtown club thing, and it was miserable and horrible, and you got treated miserably and horribly. And so I just started auditioning for theater because at least it was a little more honest, which is LOL in hindsight. But you show up to an audition, and you might get seen, and you do get to sing, and then you might be considered for a job. But, like, there is an A plus B equals C thing there, whereas in the other thing, you, like, have to know a DJ. You go to talk to a DJ, they treat you like crap, or they offer you drugs, or, like, it didn't feel good. I tapped out pretty quick on that.
So then before we move on, inside that kind of miserable experience, how do you try to get better at it, right? Like, if you look at that experience and you're showing up at downtown clubs, you're talking to DJs, you're talking to promoters, you're figuring out how to get in the door to get space on a stage, how did you refine that skill to get more and more bookings?
I didn't get bookings. I left. Right. It was that hard. I mean, the conversation of 20 years ago to now is so different. Like, because now I'd just be like, make friends with DJs, make friends with promoters, use your social media. Like, that didn't even exist back then. It was MySpace at best. Shout out to MySpace, man.
What's your best tip for editing your MySpace profile?
I I was drinking a lot in those days. I don't remember.
Sure. We all try to block out the MySpace days.
Well, just being a late teen in New York alone, there's a lot to block out.
So you moved into the theater world, and what was sort of like the entry point there? Were you specifically trying for certain kinds of musicals? I mean, if you didn't come from quote unquote theater on the move in, did you have a sense of, like, your type, as it were?
No, I mean, all of that was trial and error. And unfortunately, I wish I would have shaken this off a little bit sooner because, again, there's that pesky word hindsight. I didn't have a goal. My goal was to get seen, and then my goal was to get a callback, and then eventually my goal was to book a job. And there was one point, probably in my early 20s, where I knew what theaters I could go audition for and get a callback. So I would just go to those because I would have like 100% callback rate because I knew what I was doing for them. But I did not have a single shred of a plan. I just wanted to feel successful. And I think in my early 20s brain, that was getting a callback, booking a job. And I did that a lot for a long time. And it never, I don't think it ever really changed much. Like certainly as I stumbled along and got older, it became, oh, I only want to do these roles. Oh, I only want to work at this caliber of theater. But unfortunately, I don't think that I was thinking big enough. And it really should have just been like, I am going to go watch this show on Broadway and learn that track and show up doing that track.
Well, that sort of brings me to the question of the hour that makes sense on Daily Tips that may or may not help you. You have, you know, as we're going to get into in a second, left said industry, or at least taken a step to the left of said industry. But for people who might be newer to the industry or trying to figure stuff out for themselves, do you have any, and I'm going to challenge you because I know you, non-cynical tips and tricks to finding your spot in the theater space?
Run. No, I'm totally kidding. I do. Actually, I have a couple, and I wish that I would have done these things younger. So this is going to sound large and not intuitive to those who are in theater because I know how they're bringing you guys up. But my first one would be, do not be afraid of getting a 9-to-5 job, because guess what? The open calls, you do not need to be there. They are not important. I would say get a 9-to-5 job that pays you real actual adult money and figure it out from there, because I promise you that whatever you're going to book, whether it be television or theater, from just doing open calls under that mindset of like, I have to be available all day long, I have to go to auditions day in and day out, none of that is going to do anything for you. Like, yes, you can look at that as like little tiny building blocks of like, oh, well, at this theater I met this person, and then at this theater I met, and my entire friend group is just that, like just people I worked at, I met through jobs at theaters I worked at that didn't necessarily matter. Not all of them, but like a good chunk of them. The theaters, not the friends. They all matter. I love them. So that's one. One is, do not be afraid about getting a 9-to-5. Because one of mine, I had 2015, I did this run of like 5 or 6 shows in a row where I was the lead. I was toast. And I came back and I got a desk job. And at that desk job, I wrote a book. And then that is a totally different conversation that has taken on a life of its own and has moved me into a totally different direction. But that desk job paid me a living wage, above a living wage. I was making good money for the time and my age that I could like pay bills and still have some flexibility with cash. Don't let people tell you that you have to wait tables, that you have to bartend, that you have to cater, that you have to do merch at Broadway shows. You don't have to do any of that.
Well, Edward Miskey, you already brought up the book, which I was going to bring up. But could we back up a little bit and talk about the experience that brought you to the book?
Oh my God, you mean cancer?
Cancer.
Yeah, I had cancer. And I wrote a book about it. It was a very rare, it's a mouthful, but it was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that was very rare and aggressive, and it nearly killed me. I was diagnosed, it first showed up in my body at 24, I was diagnosed at 25, and by the time I was 26, I was cancer-free.
And how did it show up and how did you catch it?
I had a massive tumor that was very rapidly growing under my left armpit.
Oh, so like you had a lymphoma that was very obvious.
Oh, yeah. I still have like shoulder pain from like, because it was
from like,
it was under here and it was so big. I mean, like it was a melon sized tumor by the time I actually started chemo that I had to like displace my shoulder and like walk like this most of the time. Because I had to make room for this like third tit that was like hanging out of my arm. It was not great.
So then did you pause your life in acting at all?
I didn't have a choice. I told no one. I was in the middle of a show when it started to get really out of hand.
Really?
Yeah, I was doing Hairspray in Reno, Nevada. Again, shows that didn't move the needle and didn't make any difference at all. And yet somehow,
Corny Collins.
Yep, Corny Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was scary. I mean, we had to take out my costume jacket because it got so big that I didn't have room in my jacket. And when I came back from that, I started chemo like 2 weeks later.
Oh, you just went straight to the doctor and was like, I got a problem.
He knew. I had seen him before I left, and he misdiagnosed me with cat scratch fever, which is not real, and gave me antibiotics and was like, great, go to Reno for 18 weeks. And I was like, cool. In hindsight, I'm like, why didn't you biopsy this?
Also, not to really point out the scary side of our medical industry, but you then went back to that man.
That was one of the very last times I saw him.
Sure.
Just to comment on how messed up this whole thing is, I saw him. He was my regular like PCP doctor. That's what he diagnosed me with after we did a CT scan. And and then I went on my merry way. And when I came back, I saw him again and he sent me in for a biopsy. And that's when I was diagnosed. And he showed up at my hospital one time, came in and made a joke about how great I looked and are they sure they're giving me the right drugs? And then sent me a bill for $435 for showing up and telling me I looked great. And I wrote him a scathing letter, which I believe I still have in my desk. I never sent it. But I was like, if you think that I'm going to pay this, you're wrong. And it's been 13 years and I still haven't paid it. Like, no plans to.
So then into the chemo world you go. And what was your, I mean, how often, how, like, what was that experience?
It was horrendous. It was a nightmare. It was also a circus at the same time. Like, it was inpatient for anywhere between 5 and 18 days, depending on the protocol that I was having. Some of the chemo drips were 3 days long, and then there'd have to be like a certain amount of hours between the next one, and then they'd hook me up to the next one. And it was just a nonstop, really aggressive rationing of chemicals going straight into my body, into my little port. You can see my little scar right here. That's what that was for. Yeah. And it was just, we were supposed to do 8 rounds. I ended up doing 4 because we decided that none of them were working. We would start it and the tumor would shrink down, and then it would immediately shrink back as soon as I stopped. And then they put me into radiation. That seemed to do the trick. We did all kinds of tests to make sure that did the trick. And then I left my then hospital, which was horrendous, and went to Sloan Kettering, which was a night and day, like, care and everything else. And I did a stem cell transplant with them, and that was 21 days in.
Wow. So you did 21 days inpatient chemo.
Yeah. Half of which I was quarantined for.
Not to really belabor a shit point, but do you have tips and tricks for being in that situation and how you keep your damn mind?
Yeah, actually, I kept myself busy. Again, like, I hadn't told anyone this was going on. My closest friends knew, and my family knew, and that was it.
I didn't know until the book. And you and I had known each other during that whole time.
Right. I didn't tell anyone. And I told all my friends and family not to tell anyone.
They did great. We share a lot of friends, and I did not know.
You did not know. Well, and some of those friends didn't know either. But I actually started my own company while I was in the middle of chemo to keep me occupied. I was dating a guy at the time who was 6'10", and he broke up with me about 3 rounds into chemo, which was not great. And I was like, how am I ever going to meet another tall man ever again? Because I'm 6'4", and like, it's kind of hard to, you know, find someone of my size. I was like, oh, I know. I'll start. And I had pitched this idea to him, and he was like, no, that's dumb. No one will read it. A lifestyle magazine for men over 6'2". And it was called There Are Giants, and it was thereargiants.com. It no longer exists, but I did a lot of interviews with other people. I did a lot of blogging. I did a lot of research. Zach Walls, who is that kid who was like 19 years old and stood up in the Iowa, I think, Congress or Senate or whatever it was, and talked about his two moms. And he had a book called My Two Moms, which I read. I got to interview him over the phone, which was amazing. And he was so kind. Now he's in politics, which is funny because I asked him if he would ever go into politics and he had no interest back then. And here we are. So it was great, but it was a great distraction and I needed it. And it made me feel like I had something to do and gave me a purpose and gave me something to look forward to. There was literally a time where I was on my phone on FaceTime, like visually art directing a photo shoot while I was inpatient at a hospital. And I had a photographer and a photo assistant on site with a model and wardrobe person that they were like setting the room and doing the shots. And they were showing me what they were shooting from FaceTime while they were shooting it. And that kept me sane for the whole time. Like, I was inpatient for 18 days. And then following that 18 days, there's a 100 day red zone window that like you have to live through. To make sure that the transplant doesn't reject, because if it rejects, you're in trouble. That sure. means your immune system is no longer, and they have to figure out how to replace it. And you know, there was very strict diet things that I had to adhere to. There were certain things I couldn't do. I was physically drained, so like walking down the street was difficult. But that whole period of time actually was really useful later, because I had to wear gloves and masks and everything else. And so when 2020 hit, I was like, I got this. I know this life.
And how long kind of afterwards until you felt like your life hit some kind of normal stasis?
Never.
Mm.
Still. There's a guy that I follow on Instagram who I actually love, and I'm actually in a way a little jealous, because his handle is Jace Beats Cancer, and he also is 25 years old. He was also diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he has video documented everything, and it is all online. I don't know how many followers he has now, like hundreds of thousands, but he talks about the whole experience, and I'm in his comment section all the time when he's like, you know, having a really hard day today, existential crisis, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is normal. It's totally okay. It's fine. It gets better. It doesn't go away, but it gets better. Because you're especially at 25, like when you're supposed to be like hot and virile and, you know, the best part of a person's life, is your 20s are supposed to be like a really great time in your life. And, you know, you're fighting cancer, and then you're fighting yourself, and then you're fighting all these voices outside of you and inside of you. It just never goes away. You know, like your life becomes normal again because you've chosen that it is normal, but it never, sure. It never feels that way, because you're never, ever going to get back the person that you were before, ever. And you just have to kind of come to terms with that.
How did you come to terms with that? Did you have any way of like really, are you a mantra person? Is it a routine thing? Like, what is your kind of, I need to switch my brain into that mode?
This is not going to be helpful at all, but it was truly the book, getting it all out and down on paper, and like talking about it to myself in my brain, writing it down, and then going back and editing it and like having it published and putting it out there and having other people read it. That was the first time that I felt like I had control again, because up until that point, I was just kind of defaulting back to what I knew, which was like, make money, go to auditions, do shows. And writing that book was like really kind of this moment of like having agency over my life again, where it's like, oh, I made this. I did that. And it was so freeing. And that kind of led me down the path of what I call the purge, where it was like, you don't matter. This thing doesn't matter. None of this crap matters. This is all me. I got this. I'm in charge.
When the book was announced, that was after then, because you sort of started telling people what had happened like right before the book really hit and I had learned. And you announced the book, which for our viewers, the cover is over Edward's right shoulder, left screen, which is Cancer, Musical Theater, and Other Chronic Illnesses. And
that is the first edition.
That's the first edition.
Yeah, I was self-published and then I was published.
I was so proud of you and impressed with you for many reasons, but I want you to know that the primary reason is Cancer, Musical Theater, and Other Chronic Illnesses is an A+ name.
I can't take credit for it. It's not me.
Who was it?
This is the 10-year Cancer Survivorship Anniversary Edition. It was my friend Alex Perlman. Brilliant, brilliant guy. I love him so much. He does all the Broadway B-roll video stuff for, basically, if you've seen like promotional video for Broadway, he's shot it. But I just told him I was writing a book. I think we were standing. Where were we? I feel like we were standing at the train station by 72nd Street and on the 2-3 train, because that's where I used to live. And I just told him I was writing a book, and that just flew right out of his mouth. And I was like, actually, Yes.
I'm taking that.
And I wrote I wrote it down on my phone and I never went back.
it's an A+. So Alex Perlman, shout out to you.
Shout out to you. He's in the book notes, the dedication.
Give me tips and tricks for writing that book. I am a writer and I have a hell of a time keeping pedal to the metal, keeping routine. I get stuff done in weird chunks. It's not the good system. It felt to me like you hammered out this book, and I've read it a couple times. It's good, it's concise, it's well thought through, which means you got it down and you got it edited in an insanely small amount of time. And how?
It was less than a year.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, all things are connected, right? So when I got done with that 2015 year, six shows in a year burnout crap, and I got my desk job, I sat at that desk and wrote every single day that I worked. It was like front desk. All I had to do is know everyone's name and be charming and figure out where they're going. And that was it. It's not a difficult job. And in the downtime, of which there was much, I would just write. And I don't know if there was like a tip or trick to it. It was kind of like, well, you're sitting here anyway on your ass. You might as well get something done. But as far as like the process of getting it out, it really was just brain vomit. And like, I wish that I still had like the very, very, very first draft of the book, because it was like 120,000 words. It was so long. And it started with like, I grew up in central Pennsylvania. And it just, I got to the point where I was so sick of myself that I was like, shut up. No one cares. And it was what taught me how not to be precious about anything that I'm writing. Like, I'm so good at the kill your darlings thing with writing because I don't care. I'm like, will it make it the story better? Will it be more concise? Will it be more efficient and interesting? Great. Get rid of it. I don't care. I have no attachment to it whatsoever. This book was the start of that, because I was like, oh, but I love my family. I want to include them. Who cares? It doesn't matter. You're not famous. They're not famous.
It's
not matter.
And it's not related to this story.
Right. And that's the other thing, is that when you're writing, if you're not being specific, you're wasting your energy. Like, this book takes place over the course of a year, 1 year of my life. That is it. Anything outside of that, unless it was an intentional flashback of like a story I wanted to tell to tie into a point I was making, it is only in this 1 year period of time. Like, the specificity of like, this is the window in which you're writing and nothing outside of that matters. And just telling myself that over and over and over again when I was writing was like, nope, not in the 2012 year, get rid of it. And it took that book from 120,000 words down to like 85,000 in no time.
Well, I want you to know, you do have one tip that you don't even realize, because I don't know that you and I have ever talked about it. But in 2016 and 17, when I was going through my parents passing away from cancer, you sent me a really nice message. And we didn't know each other that well at that time. We knew each other, you know, in passing, because we'd hang out at parties because we didn't like talking to other people. So we were just talking to each other. And you sent me a really nice message. And it said like, hey, this is going to suck. Times suck. The dumbest thing you can do is spend your time on what sucks. Go do something else with your brain space. And it was really important. And I produced a thing that became the first thing I ever sold. And a lot of that had to do with yourself and people like you writing me about, it's not wasting your time to dedicate yourself to what you're doing, but it is a waste of your energy to only dedicate it to how much it sucks.
I mean, listen, 2016-year-old me sounds like he knew what he was doing.
He was killing it.
Killing it. Yeah, I mean, that's still true. And that's still something I tell myself now. Like, it's totally okay to be upset about something. It's totally okay to feel the feelings. But like, it can't be the only thing you're doing. Like, feel the feelings while you're doing something else. And again, we were talking earlier off recording about practical application of everything. Like, there's no point in doing anything unless there's practical application involved. If you're feeling a feeling and it's not great, okay, use it for something. It's there for a reason. You have that feeling for a reason. You don't know what that is, fine, but apply it to something. See what happens.
So then we move out of the book and you come back to the world of theater.
Truthfully, I never should have, but I did.
What was that like? Coming back, as someone who's come back to this art form after a remarkably traumatic life experience. What was that like for you, and how did you find yourself navigating the differences between pre-cancer and post-cancer theater Edward?
I mean, I had, it was nice to be back in a familiar, in something familiar, because after being in two different hospitals and, like, you know, losing my hair and body and, like, hope, you know, it was nice to be back in a place that I recognized and around people that I recognized. But the other part of it that was really upsetting, and I have made, I don't know how many TikToks and Instagram reels about this, and I will say this until the day that I die. The weird part about this time in my life was that after I had nearly died and my entire body had been disassembled in some way or another, I have never, ever been told I looked hotter than I did in that period of time. After I was like, after I was near next to dead. And and it really, like that, it sucked. It really was hard to hear and listen to. And of course, no one was ill-intentioned about it. But it was one of those moments where it's like, thank you. And I just remind myself and others as often as I possibly can that beauty standards and what people think is hot is stupid. Because I was literally basically a corpse and people were like, you look amazing. And these were people who had no idea I had cancer. So they weren't trying to like be polite or anything. It was literally just like, oh my God, where have you been? You look amazing. And it was like, oh, I had cancer. And they would be like, oh, like, stop it. And so like that was a very strange period of time. And I'd be so curious to like see, there's no video footage of me back then, really. I stayed very clear of photos and video of any kind. But I'd be very curious to see what my reaction to that version of me would be now, to see just how much I was hurting, to see how uncomfortable I felt and looked, and how hard I was working to try not to be. I remember I had just gotten back into auditioning. I think it was like 6 or 7 months after my 100 days after the stem cell transplant was over. And I was just doing the rounds. You know, I went to like this random ECC for North Shore Music Theater up in Massachusetts for Sound of Music. I went in, I sang whatever I sang. The director asked me if I could waltz. I said, yeah, my grandma taught me when I was a kid. I know how. And they were like, oh, great. Months went by and I booked it. No idea how, no idea why. And I should have been thrilled. I should have been like, oh my God, this like top tier theater in the country has hired me to like be an understudy, be in the ensemble. I was with like a soap star and like this now Tony nominated actress. Like there were some really solid people in that show. And I should have been thrilled. But the whole time that I was there, all I was doing was panicking that cancer was coming back. Every little bump, every bruise, everything. I left rehearsal once to call my mom to have a meltdown. Like, and we were having fun, and that I could like kind of let go of a lot of my worry. But there would be times, even in the middle of a show, where I would just go sheet white and just be like, I can feel something growing inside of me. And obviously that's not true, but that's what your brain does. And it's this weird, like hypochondrian, the like phantom pain crap that you, like somehow is living inside of you throughout this whole thing.
So I'm going to fast forward us about 5 years. So to about 2 years ago, if my math is right.
Yeah, about.
Nailed
it. Look at me doing math. I'm like 6 points.
You did great. Your eyes rolled back in your head to do it, which is very funny.
I'm pretty.
So you said, in your 20s and when you first came back and you were trying to find your semblance of normal, that you were just trying to audition, just trying to get a callback, just trying to book. If you look forward to the last, let's say, 24 to 36 months of our lives, let's say post COVID, even though we're still living in a very COVID-y world, to now, what is the just that has adjusted for you? What do you just want to be doing now if it's not audition and it's not book and it's not callback?
I'm so glad you asked. I mean, the book is still happening. The book I still want to do. Obviously, you know, I'm adapting it for television as a musical series. So like, and it's a no-brainer. Like, hello, that makes sense. My just is, I'm so happy in my job right now. I'm so happy with the stability, with the money I'm making, with the access that it is giving me to the rest of my life by just having this stable job, that I love my team. I love the people I work with. I'm just so happy in that aspect. And I think outside of that, the just is that I'm not interested in auditioning for your fucking project. I don't care. I don't care. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be in a theater thing. I don't want to do anything else unless I want to. My just is that I am just going to work on my projects that I have made, that I like and I believe in. And that is it.
What for you has been the hardest part of transitioning from a life as a full-time artist to a life as a full-time 9-to-5?
Not hard at all. Not a single thing.
Great.
I think it is so much easier because, you know, I often will refer to like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where if your food, water, shelter, stability foundation is not covered, the rest of it can't happen. You cannot progress past that part. And I have spent so many years of my life with nothing, with no ability to like have actual money. And I play it off well. People probably don't believe that. But like, there have been years where I have had absolutely no money in the bank.
Hilarious time for
an Apple emoji pop up. There have been I've had no money in the bank.
No money in the bank.
And now it's not doing it.
Now won't do it. So come on, rude. Apple.
But yeah, there have been times where there's been absolutely nothing, and I've maxed out like my 8th credit card, and like just things were bad, and that is in the recent past. And so having moved into 9-to-5 world, I don't have to worry about that anymore. I'm locked in. I'm not going anywhere. I don't have to think about any of that. So you know what I can think about? Coming home after work and feeding myself and sitting down at my laptop and writing, or setting up meetings with people that I want to talk to about other projects that I'm working on. Like, it has freed up so much brain space, so much worry space that I was panicked about 24/7 all the time. Gone. Completely gone. Completely gone.
What have you found is the number one skill that transferred for you from the world of professional artist to the world of professional? I know that I'm not supposed to ask you where you work, so I won't.
Please don't. love them, but no. I mean, any person who works in entertainment knows what I mean when I say that you just fit in where you need to fit in. And I think the most positive transferable skill is that I know how to talk to these guys. I know how to just be in a 9-to-5 space. I know how to get from point A to point B because of my background in producing in theater. You know, I know how to do like organization for anyone who's produced. You know what the spreadsheets and the lists and the email chains and all of that, and the calendars and the schedules and all that crap looks like, the logistical nightmares of putting shows together or concerts or whatever have you. Those skills are what I do on a daily basis and get paid way more money than I did doing that in professional theater, because you know how to keep things together. You can, like, any problem is a spreadsheet. Any problem is a list. Make one.
Okay. So before we get into the tell me more about yourself and the things you want to plug portion of the podcast, I have a little segment I'm calling Hey Tippendales. What about that thing? What is a problem you are having now? And I actually ask that we aim smaller than larger wherever possible, that you would like a tip or trick to try and help you solve.
I think one that is an actual real, like, someone help me here is, like, I'm 6'4". I'm all rib cage and legs. It is very hard for me to find fun clothing. And I do luck out sometimes. I made the stupid mistake of going downtown to meet my parents today without a coat. I had a sweater on and I had a scarf because it said 50 degrees. And I was like, we're good. It was so goddamn cold and windy.
Very chilly.
I walked my ass into Forever 21 and I bought a coat.
Do you like it?
I love it. I got three.
See?
I got three compliments on it in the first 4 hours I was wearing it.
Wow.
It's hot. Anyway.
Well, then Tippendales.
Forever 21.
Send us your Edward Miskey how to find clothes as an all ribbed cage and legs human being.
But let me be more specific, if,
okay, great.
If I may.
Yeah.
This is Old Navy. This is a cute little shirt. I love it. I want shirts that are like see-through, or I want shirts that are like embroidered and see-through. I want shirts that like are sparkly. I want
and see-through.
And see-through. I want pants that are patterned. I want a tuxedo stripe with like a flare. I want fun, flash and trash clothing. And don't tell me ASOS. No one say ASOS. I will kill you. I will jump through this microphone. If you just said ASOS, I'm coming for you. Anyway, I cannot find fun clothing like that. Please help. I want really fun, fabulous, Liberace level clothing.
Tippendales, help us out. Edward Miskey, thank you for joining us. Hey, where can the people find you? What you got going on that you can talk about? Where can people find Cancer Musical Theater and Other Chronic Illnesses? Give me the deets.
People can find Cancer Musical Theater and Other Chronic Illnesses anywhere where you buy books. That includes Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, etc. You can also find it, if you're in New York City, at the Drama Bookshop on West 39th Street.
Oh, I don't know that I knew that. It's at Drama Bookshop.
It is in Drama Bookshop, and they're all signed copies. And so you get my little John Hancock inside the book. I do want to say, to the point of what I am able to talk about, tip for the Tippendales. Plot and plan in silence. Not everything is content. Don't give yourself away. There is something to be said about shutting up and working in the shadows. And I know that is counterintuitive with Instagram influencer world, everybody. I have so much going on. No one knows about it. And I cannot wait, because people are going to be like, oh my God, how did you do that? It's like, I've been working on this for years. And you didn't know. Not everything is a get ready with me. Not everything is a, hey, look over here. Give it a minute. Plot and plan, make the thing happen, and then go.
That's a lovely tip to leave us with. Where can the people find you?
You can find me on all social platforms except for X, formerly known as Twitter, at Edward Miskey.
That's EDWARDMISKIE. For those of you who can't see it in the lower third chyron right below Edward right now. There it is. Edward, thank you so much for coming and being our very first guest tipper. Thank you for four great tips in December. Edward Miskey, thank you so much. We love you dearly. This has been a joy.
Love you too. Thank you.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.